Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Guiding Light. I'm going to start with a song that is in Tamil. Tamil is the language that Ramana Maharshi was grown up with. And it's, of course, the language of that area of southern India. However, the song was written by Ramana Maharshi. And it's a summary of his teachings. And so what you'll see on the screen, those of you who are here in the sanctuary live, what you'll see on the screen is the English words that go with the Tamil that you're hearing. All right? So enjoy this song by Ramana Maharshi.
ईश्वरार्पितं नेच्छया कृतं चित्तशोधकं मुक्तिसाधकं कायवाङ्मनः कार्यमुत्तमं पूजनं जपः चिन्तनं क्रमात् जगत ईषदि युक्तसेवनम् अष्टमूर्तिभृत् देवपूजनम् चित्तया ह्यहम् ईश जीवयो darshanam swatma rupatah atma samstitih swatma darshanam atma nirdvaya atma nishtata jnana varjita ajnana hina chidjnanam asti kim jnatum antaram kim swarupam ityatma sukham bandha muktyatitam param sukham vindatiha jivastu daivikah aham apedakam nijavibhanakam mahadidam tapo ramanavagiyam aham apedakam nijavibhanakam mahadidam tapo ramanavagiyam
song again, but this I'm muted. Can you hear me now? Okay, so what I am going to do now is I am going to play the song again, but this time I'm going to turn off the sound, and I'm just going to read the lyrics, because I know that for some people the lyrics may have gone by pretty quickly and you weren't able to absorb them. And I also know that some people are listening to an audio and they weren't able to see the lyrics. So we'll just look at the lyrics. Again, this is a song written by Ramana Maharshi. Let me look up one word. There was one word I didn't know. It was the very last word, tapas. I know what that is in Spanish, food. Right, it's all the little dishes. But I don't know what that is in Sanskrit. Oh, and it's not in my little glossary either, because the word must not have been used in this book. So there'll be one word that I'll just use the Sanskrit word. I don't really know what it means. Maybe somebody will be able to look it up and we'll look at it afterwards. So I'm going to share my screen this time again, but I'm going to keep the sound so that I can talk to you. And let me go back and play that song again. Maybe I'll just make it real small like that. Is that real small to you guys? Can you hear my voice better? Or is the music in the way? It's okay? All right. By the will of the Creator, action bears fruit. Is action then supreme? I'm going to turn it off because I'm going to be pausing it every now and then. So I'll just turn the sound completely off. By the will of the Creator, action bears fruit. Is action then supreme? No. It is inert, unconscious. The fruits of action are not everlasting, and they cause one to fall into the great ocean of karma, blocking spiritual progress. The fruits of action are not everlasting, and they cause one to fall into the great ocean of karma, blocking spiritual progress. That action which is done without personal desire and whose fruits are surrendered to the Lord purifies the mind and leads to liberation. Again, that action which is done without personal desire and whose fruits are surrendered to the Lord purifies the mind and leads to liberation. Ritual worship, repetition of sacred names, and meditation are done with the body, the speech, and the mind, and they progress in excellence in that order. Ritual worship, repetition of sacred names, and meditation. That's the order. Meditation, of course, being the best option. To serve the world looked upon as the manifestation of the Lord is to offer worship to the Lord. Again, to serve the world looked upon as the manifestation of the Lord is to offer worship to the Lord. Silent meditation in the mind is higher than the best devotional praise or the uttering of sacred names loudly or softly. Silent meditation in the mind is higher than the best devotional praise or the uttering of sacred names loudly or softly. Like an unbroken flow of oil or a stream of water, continuous meditation is better than that which is interrupted. Like an unbroken flow of oil or a stream of water, continuous meditation is better than that which is interrupted. Meditation on the identity of the individual and the Lord, I am He, is more purifying than meditation which assumes a difference between them. Meditation on the identity of the individual and the Lord, I am He, is more purifying than meditation which assumes a difference between them. By the power of meditation, devoid of thoughts, one is established in true being, and this is supreme devotion. By the power of meditation, devoid of thoughts, one is established in true being, and this is supreme devotion. The practice of fixing the mind in its own source, in the heart, is without doubt true bhakti, yoga, and understanding. Or we could say true devotion, oneness, and understanding. The practice of fixing the mind in its own source, in the heart, is without doubt true bhakti, yoga, and understanding. The mind may be subdued by regulating the breath, just as a bird is restrained when caught in a net. This practice controls the mind. Mind and breath, manifesting in thought and action, branch out from a common source, the sakti. And I don't know what the sakti is. There were two words I didn't know. Absorption, or laya, and destruction, or nasa, are the two kinds of mind control. When merely absorbed, it emerges again, but not when it is destroyed. And many of you are familiar with the word mano nasa, that means mind destruction. Mano, mind, nasa, destruction. So absorption, or laya, and destruction, or nasa, are the two kinds of mind control. When merely absorbed, it emerges again, but not when it is destroyed. When the mind has been suspended by breath restraint, it may then be annihilated by single-minded attention to the self. So again, here what Ramana is pointing to is the same thing we saw last week, that the use of the breath to restrain the mind or to get the mind silent is only a beginning step. Once the mind is silent, then you focus attention on awareness. That's the true meditation, not the focusing on the breath. So when the mind has been suspended by breath restraint, it may then be annihilated by single-minded attention to the self. What action remains to be done by that great yogi whose mind has been extinguished and who rests in his own true and transcendent state of being? If one's attention is turned away from external objects of sense and focused on the light of the self, that is the true vision of reality. If one's attention is turned away from the external objects of sense and focused on the light of the self, that is the true vision of reality. Again, if one persists in asking, what is this mind of mine? It will be found that there is really no such thing as a mind. This is the direct path. What one has thought of as his mind is merely a bundle of thoughts. All these thoughts depend upon the one thought of I, the ego. Therefore, the so-called mind is the I thought. And this is important because a lot of people think the I thought is the I. You know, like I said, I want, I. And what he's saying is the entire mind, every single thought that arises, even if it's you said, right, that's still the I thought because it all comes from the I, right? What one has thought of as his mind is merely a bundle of thoughts. All these thoughts depend upon the one thought of I, the ego. Therefore, the so-called mind is the I thought. If one asks himself, where does this I come from? It will vanish. This is self-inquiry, or Atma Vikara. Where does this I come from? Where this I vanished and merged in its source, there appears spontaneously and continuously an I. This is the heart, the infinite supreme being. So notice he's calling what we call awareness or infinite awareness. He's calling it I. Sometimes it's also called the true self. Today we also saw in Jacqueline's teaching that it could be called the no self, right? Many different symbols pointing to the same thing. Where this I vanished and merged in its source, there appears spontaneously and continuously an I. This is the heart, the infinite supreme being. And this uninterrupted I is the true meaning of the term I. Because when the waking ego I daily disappears in deep sleep, the real I remains. This true I, the one reality, is not the body or the senses or mind or breath or ignorance. These are all inert and insentient. There is only one being that can know reality. That one only being is itself reality and is itself consciousness. There is only one being that can know reality. That one only being is itself reality and is itself consciousness. Both creator and creature are essentially one and the same reality. Their apparent differences are due only to differences in form and levels of knowledge. When the creature abandons its illusory individual form and recognizes itself as without attributes, it sees the creator as its own true self. Being the self is knowing the self, because there is only one self, not two. This being and knowing the self is abiding in reality. Being the self is knowing the self, because there is only one self, not two. This being and knowing the self is abiding in the reality. True knowledge is beyond what we think of as knowledge or ignorance, because in the state of non-differentiation, what other thing is to be known? If one's true self is known, then there is neither birth nor death, but eternal being, consciousness, bliss. The jiva who attains the state of supreme bliss, beyond any thoughts of bondage or freedom, is truly devoted to the Lord. The jiva who attains the state of supreme bliss, beyond any thoughts of bondage or freedom, is truly devoted to the Lord. When the individual I has disappeared and the real I has been found, that is excellent tapas. Ramana says this. When the individual I has disappeared and the real I has been found, that is excellent tapas. Ramana says this. And that is the end of his song. So, all right, so tapas in Sanskrit means warmth, heat, fire. Sanskrit literally means produced by heat, to a personal endeavor of discipline undertaken to achieve a goal. All right, so intense practice, it sounds like. So there we go, 25 minutes with the opening song. What do you think of that? And actually, tonight is going to be a little different anyway. We, as you know, we're looking at the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And the last chapter that I read, we did finish it, was called The Heart is the Self. And those of you who were paying attention, you know, each of the weeks, I think there were 3 weeks of it, I'm sure that you heard me say, this is not my favorite chapter in this book. You know, there was just way too much discussion about where is the heart located. And as we just saw in the song by Ramana Maharshi, it doesn't have a location, right? It's what we call the true self, or as Jacqueline referred to it this morning, the non-self, which is the same thing. It doesn't have a location in the body. But we just looked at a whole chapter discussing that. Well, I thought what we would do tonight is go ahead and look at a few videos that also discuss this. One I talked about last week, I mistakenly said it was Gary Weber, and I tried to find it. I couldn't find it last week. The reason was it's not Gary Weber. It's Greg Good. So I do have the video, and I'm going to show that video to you now. So the topic here is what is the location of awareness, which would be the same as what is the location of the spiritual heart. But this is a bit of an exercise. So instead of just watching the video, make sure you kind of play along within yourself. That way it will make a lot more sense. Oh, wait, let me pause it and turn the sound back up. It might help if you can hear it. There we go.
Wow. Well, so I went to visit Greg Goode, and I came to him through Stephen Wingate, who's a spiritual teacher in Massachusetts. All right, I'm rolling here. One of the exercises that he led me through was a self-inquiry exercise where you try to locate the self, try to find yourself.
So I'll be talking to you as a interlocutor, as a conversational partner. Most people, you probably feel like you are located somewhere. And let's try to find that. And see if we really do find it. So let's say we'll play like a geometry game and draw an invisible plane. We'll start halving the body, you know, cutting it in half, like conceptually. So like at the belt line, let's cut the body in half and put the two halves aside. And so if you had to choose one of those two halves that you thought you were localized in, the upper half or the lower half, which would it be? And, you know, answer this as like normal intuition, not like, oh, I can play the non-dual game, you know, just like normally how it feels. Because actually, to be honest about the feelings is a great way to not like try to do an end run around the intuitions, is a good way to sniff out what we feel and a good way to actually deconstruct it more effectively. So then, let's take another cut at the line of the breast right there. So basically the upper torso and the belly. So you have to choose one side or the other where you feel that you're located. All our cuts are lateral so far. So we're here.
So I'm above.
Okay. Oh, so you pointed up towards the head, so that might save us some time. Some people may feel like located in the heart, but you mentioned you kind of gestured upwards. So can we save some time and make a cut at the neck?
Yep.
And you have a firm answer as to which side that would be?
All right.
That would be above, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So then, let's make some cuts in the other direction. Let's make some cuts in this direction. Let's cut like right in the middle of the eyes. So right in the middle of the eyes, vertically like this, we're cutting into three slices, like the left slice, the middle slice, and the right slice. So now we have a middle slice like this. Now let's make some cuts the next dimension. Let's make one like right, like 1 inch behind the forehead, and make another one parallel to it. Like cut the head into thirds this way. So we have a front third, a center third, and a rear third.
We split me up into lots of subsections and determined that I was in basically behind my eyes in a small kind of spherical shape. It was a sense of where I was.
Focus on this point. Really try to isolate it. Really try to focus on it, like feel it. Try to focus on this as strongly as you can and really isolate it and, like you were saying before, amp it up.
Based on my sense, it felt like that this kind of thing feels more somehow me, this object in the head.
Does the spot itself seem to arise as something you're aware of?
Yeah.
Well then, that's it. It's an arising object. So no matter how, so we just went through an example of trying to slice as minutely, and we could have gone, you know, more and more and more minutely until we couldn't, you know, piece it more finely than we did. And no matter how finely we sliced it, there was always something that was aware of it. And we feel more on the side of that which is aware of, rather than that which is the object that has arisen. So we've just had an experience of the I as subject, the true I as a subject, and the sense of localization as another arising object. And that I that is the subject is the same I that seems to be there in deep sleep. You know, whether objects arise or not, whether, you know, in trance, in meditation, in times when you're zoned out, you know, like maybe sleeping, dreaming, or daydreaming, or one of those times when you're just seems like conventionally lost in the object or in the zone, as they say, when the notion of subject and object kind of like dissipates for a moment. That same presence is uninterruptedly there all the time. It doesn't come and go. And since it's not an object, it can't come and go. Something has to have form in order to be able to appear and disappear. And that's you as formlessness is why you don't disappear.
So he's zeroing me in on that, and then afterwards pointing out that who is zeroing in on that? I find that myself is not located in any particular point. The idea that I'm located in a particular point is something that comes and goes. So then I'm nowhere to be found. My thoughts, my emotions, my body, my feelings inside of my body, the people I see in front of me, all experiences I have come and gone, but the sense of being, it can't be found as an object. That's my true self.
So what y'all think of that? Did that work for you? Not good. Does anybody have anything they want to share? Go ahead, Jay. Are you having trouble unmuting, Jay? Never mind. Okay. I think that's what that meant. Never mind. Yeah, I love that. I love that video. I remembered it from, it was actually Gentle Healing Year One near the end, or at least in the second half. And I thought that video is a great example, a great experiment that teaches what Ramana Maharshi was trying to say over and over and over again. You know, whether you call it the heart, whether you call it the self, whether you call it awareness, it doesn't have a location in the body. And, you know, people seem to be, I thought it later that it might not have been all one devotee that was just very thick-headed. It might have been several devotees, and the editor of the book may have taken all those conversations and put them together. Because if not, this one devotee was pretty thick-headed. So, but we, what we kept seeing is it in the chest? And if so, where in the chest? Or is it, you know, behind the, you know, in the third eye area between the eyebrows? And what this video, I think, what this experiment clearly showed was that it was neither. You know, that you're the one that's aware of whatever you finally say, that's me right there, that's me right between the eyes, that's where I am. But then what's aware of that? What sees that? And then you can't find that. Right? You can't actually find the seer. That was a guided self-inquiry exercise by Greg Good. And Good has an E at the end of it. Guided self-inquiry exercise by Greg Good. Now, when I went looking for that, I ran across a few other things that I haven't actually seen, but they piqued my curiosity. They were related to this same topic. So I thought that we might just watch videos tonight. So I have three more short videos, assuming we have time for all three of them. The first video is Rupert Spira talking about the location of awareness, or the fact that awareness doesn't have a location, actually. And then the second two videos are guided meditative exercises by Locke Kelly. So what I'm going to do is just turn this on, and if we have time, we'll watch all three of them without interruption. So enjoy this little video montage.
The reason we think awareness is nothing is because we think that all of this is something. The teenage kid is watching football. He's watching match of the day. His mum comes in and says, "What are you looking at?" He says, "Match of the day." 20 minutes later, his mum comes in. The game's finished. Kids turn the TV off. His mum says, "What are you watching?" He says, "Nothing." The reason he says nothing now is because he said something earlier. The nothing that he's watching now with the screen off, with the TV off, is the complement to the feeling I'm seeing something when I'm watching Match of the Day. However, if his mum had come in and said to him while he was watching Match of the Day, "What are you looking at?" And he had said, "A screen." 20 minutes later, he's turned the TV off. His mum comes in again and says, "What are you looking at now?" What would he say?
Can we repeat that again?
In the second scenario, yeah, the kid is watching Match of the Day. Mum comes in, says, "What are you looking at?" He's a smart kid, so he just says, "I'm looking at the screen." 20 minutes later, the game's over. He turns the TV off. His mum comes in again and says, "Now what are you looking at?"
And he's still facing the same direction.
He's still facing the same direction.
Yeah, the screen.
What does he says, "The screen."
Yeah.
Because he realized he was seeing the screen in the first instance, he realizes he's still seeing the screen in the second instance. Mm-hmm. In the first scenario, he thought he was seeing something in the first instance. So in the second instance, he said, "I'm seeing nothing." If you think you're seeing something in the waking state, then you think that deep sleep will be nothing. But if we realize that in the waking state, there are no things, it's just consciousness, then we realize that deep sleep is not a blank, empty nothing, or indeed the experience of consciousness is not a blank, empty nothing. But the problem is, the underlying problem is the deep belief we have, and this belief outlives many years of non-dual exploration. This has been my experience. It is the belief that now it is I, the body, that is aware of my experience. That is the reason we have this problem. Because it seems now for all of us, including myself, that experience is perceived from the perspective of the body. I close my eyes, the sight of the room disappears. Therefore, it's so obvious, isn't it, that consciousness must be located behind the eyes. Because I see everything when I look in this direction. I see everything in front of me. When I close my eyes, everything in front of me vanishes. Therefore, the logical conclusion is consciousness is located in the body behind the eyes. Hence the belief, it is I, the body, that is aware of my experience. And it is because of this deep feeling that it is I, the body, that is aware, as opposed to the understanding that it is I, awareness, that am aware, that we have this difficulty. If it is clear to us now that it is I, awareness, that is aware, and that we see the world as if from the perspective of the body, but that the awareness with which we experience the body and the world is not located in the body or the world, but the body and the world is located in awareness, then the question of awareness being aware of itself is just obvious. It is obviously awareness's primary experience to be aware of the experience of being aware. So we really have to, if there is a lingering belief, it is I, the body, that is aware, then that belief will make it impossible to understand that awareness is aware of itself in the absence of objects. We have to realize first that it is now awareness that is aware of experience. It is not the body that is aware of experience. The body is experienced. It doesn't do the experiencing.
It's such a tussle between the... It's so counterintuitive to many years of training. You know,
it's a tussle, but just... I mean, this is only an image, but it's an image that shows how persuasive the waking state point of view is. Imagine that you fall asleep in Garrison. So Mark falls asleep in Garrison, but he dreams he is John on the streets of New York. Now, when John looks at the streets of New York, he sees whatever is in front of his eyes. When he closes his eyes, the streets of New York vanish. So he quite reasonably assumes that the consciousness with which he is experiencing the streets of New York lives just behind his eyes. But what is John's consciousness? Where does it really reside? In Mark's mind, in bed in Garrison. But the illusion from John's illusory point of view, that the belief that the knowing with which I know my experience lives inside my eyes or inside my head, it is so strong. And his entire experience of the streets of New York seems to confirm his belief that the knowing with which he knows his experience lives inside the body. Why couldn't exactly the same thing be true of the waking state? Because if we explore our experience, everything suggests that it is. Because our experience is not that consciousness is in the body. The body is a series of perceptions and sensations that appear in consciousness. It's a real confrontation. This is the root of the issue. The belief and the feeling that consciousness lives in and shares the limits of the body. It's absolutely the crux of the matter. If this knot is untangled, all the other knots get untangled very easily.
So this is the...
So, welcome. I'd just like to go through a series of practices today. And let's begin by learning how to unhook awareness from the thinker. So currently what we have is a sense of identity that's located somewhere in our head, looking out of our eyes, almost as if there's a little mini-me in here that's created out of thought, looping upon thought, that creates a feeling of an entity that co-opts our boundary program and then feels as if it has a craving to satisfy itself just the way our body craves. So there's a feeling of a perpetual dissatisfaction on the level of identity. And this feeling of this thinker or this small self or this mini-me is what is possible to relax and to decenter from where we are and to shift our awareness to this more open-hearted awareness. So what we're going to do is we're going to learn how to unhook and drop. So let's begin with a couple of simple ways to do it. So the first is almost to feel as if you're understanding what I'm saying. Feel that sense of identification, of awareness with thought that makes you feel like you're listening to me, you're watching, you're trying to understand. And it's hard to see that mini-me because it is actually what you're listening through. So if we allow awareness to simply unhook from thought and come to seeing. So just feel that simple movement of awareness plus thinking and then awareness with seeing. And just as awareness can unhook from thought and come to seeing, feel the difference and feel how awareness moves when awareness unhooks from seeing and comes to one of your ears so that you have awareness and hearing. So feel the dramatic difference. You haven't moved your eyes or your ears. The only thing that's moved is awareness. So now you have this awareness that's identified with this small area of sensation, vibration at one ear. And just as awareness can focus in a small area, just feel what it's like if awareness now opens to become aware of the space in which sound is coming and going. So let awareness open, notice the sounds, but then become interested in the space, the objectless, contentless space in which sound is coming and going. So there's no thing to grasp. And notice that awareness can mingle with the space, almost as if awareness can go to the wall and turn around. And so now you're not only aware of open space, but feel what it's like if you're aware from open space. So feel that sense of spacious awareness, looking back, feeling back, including your thoughts, feelings, and sensations. And if you have a sense of the difference, just inquire, am I aware of the spacious awareness, or am I the spacious awareness aware of thoughts, feelings, and sensations? And when you feel you're the spacious awareness, you've shifted into this source of mind, this awareness-based knowing. And then feel that that awareness is inclusive, is spacious and pervasive within your body so that you feel a sense of embodiment, presence, and inclusion of thoughts, feelings, and sensations. So you're knowing your thoughts, emotions, and sensations directly from within. So you feel a field of aliveness and space and awareness and a boundless sense of flow and empty clarity. And just notice what this is like to be here, to be free of this point of view. Let awareness search throughout your body to see whether you can find a manager made of thought. And upon not finding, let awareness rest open and flowing without a sense of location. So notice the sense of awareness that has no point of view, that you're aware of your body from your body, you're aware of the space from space, aware of the whole field of awareness that is embodied and connected in front, behind, within, all around. And just get used to this sense of what is it like to have this kind of non-thought-based clarity and awakeness, this intelligence prior to thought, and intelligence that can use thought when needed, and intelligence that's organizing thoughts without having to look at the screen of the mind or look at every pop-up or every program running, but feel that you're able to drop, open, and include, so that you're at home in your heart, open heart space, and you're using Wi-Fi to the files in your office. So they're coming down to you, and you don't have to go up to know or look from there. And you feel like you're here and now, and just get used to this feeling of this ground of being, the sense of freedom, inclusion, boundless joy, peace of mind, open heart. So let's do another glimpse practice. Let's do a little series where we feel the ability to unhook from identification with thinking and find a way to drop below our neck and remain at home in this new heart mind, in this heart space, yeah? So let's try it very simply, just to say that the awareness is the foundation of intelligence. So even when it unhooks, you can know directly from wherever the awareness is, that you're not knowing from this point of view, and you're not knowing from orienting or referencing thought. So just feel what that's like. So let's unhook awareness from thought, almost like you're taking a hood off. Yeah? Unhook awareness from thought. Have awareness. Feel your jaw from within. Feel your throat directly from within. And then awareness moving down. So you're feeling local awareness directly from within your upper body. So you're knowing the aliveness and the space and the awareness from within your upper body. You're not looking down from thought. You're not looking up to thought for a second opinion. Unhook, know directly, jaw, throat, open heart space. Then just as you're open here, you can let awareness open to the space all around in which sound is coming and going, until that awareness discovers an awareness that's already aware as this field, as this ocean of awareness. So surrender, or go to the wall and turn around, or feel like you're aware of spacious awareness, and then spacious awareness is aware of itself. And just feel what that's like, that contentless, boundless, thought-free, sense-free, pure awareness. Just long enough so you feel like it's the ground, or it's knowing itself without thought. And then notice that awareness is already inherently within your body. It's inherently arising as form. The ocean of awareness is arising as the waves of aliveness, sensation, and emotion, so that you have a sense of this inclusion, and you're feeling your heart at home in your heart. So just rest in the stillness, rewiring your brain and allowing yourself to familiarize with this boundless ground of being. So let's try another way of glimpsing this unhooking and dropping to this from head to heart. So if what we can do in this one is ride the breath. So let awareness unhook from thought, and then as you breathe in, let your air and your breath come in. Awareness can ride the breath as the breath comes down, and then awareness remains down here and your breath can come out. Yeah, so this is just a way to feel like you can come back home by riding your breath. So awareness is identified with thought, and then breathe out, and then as you breathe in, unhook awareness from thinking. Breathe in, let your awareness ride your breath till it fills your lungs, and then let awareness remain down as your breath goes out. So this sense of riding your breath is one way to unhook and come back to your senses. So here's another glimpse that we can try, another way of unhooking awareness from thinking and have it drop down. So we begin to feel we've moved from head to heart, from head mind to heart mind. So the heart that we're dropping into is not the emotional heart. It's not the physical heart. It's not the heart chakra. It's not the cave of the heart. It's this heart space or this heart mind that's like a door that opens up behind you, comes out in front of you. So feel as if you can make a sound to help yourself unhook awareness and have it drop down so it finds a place of resting in your heart mind. So we can use a typical sound like Om as a way to start some resonance. And this is one of the reasons people do this sound Om, is to feel like you're creating vibration in this heart space. So as you breathe in, and then make the sound of Om at home. Om. And as you continue, just unhook awareness from thought and have it be drawn down from your head, from the vibration of thoughts in your head, to the vibration of this heart space in your body. Om. So as you end the sound of Om, just stay at home in this heart space. And here's another little support that you can play with. So as you've unhooked in whichever way you have, just feel as if you're supporting your intelligence from being drawn back up like a magnet or like a rubber band being bounced back up to this thinker-based center of awareness. So as you unhook and drop, put your hands here almost like you're holding a balloon gently underwater. So as you come down, feel this sense of buoyancy and just stay here so you don't look up to thought. Stay with this heart knowing, this sense of flow, and this sense of training a new habit.
And with that, I'm going to stop. So thanks for hanging out with me, and I'll see you again before then as well, but for this program next Sunday night.